Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Bahar B'chukotai. This week, Rabbi Mike Feer discusses Bahar B'chukotai. Rabbi Mike Feer is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Mike Feer.
So we've arrived at the end of another Sefer of the Chumash, another book of the five books of the Torah. And I actually had the privilege of opening this book together with you and giving it what I hope was a fruitful frame about holiness. And now we get to make a little bit of closure together. And at first glance, this seems to be a natural moment for it because what's coming to a close in the narrative is actually Ma'amad Har Sinai. The standing at Sinai has been going on basically since the 18th, 19th chapter of Shemot, of Exodus. Here, it seems the download of divine law is finally finished, at least for now, as we'll see in Bamidbar, it'll pick up again, and we can get back to the journey of life. But not quite yet, because there's one powerful parsha that lies almost at the end of the book of Vayikra, which seems to add a new element to the divine relationship, and that's the blessings and the curse. It can be a little bit hard to read, and whatever you think of the notion of reward and punishment, it's not hard on the surface of it to understand the logic which underlies its placement here at the end of Sinai. I mean, you could just look at it like the parent of a young child. God's letting us know that he really means it. And apparently he's not above bribery, or at least the promise of reward. And if you don't do what I say, oy vavoy. But I really think that that's an inadequate understanding of what's actually happening here at the end of Sinai. And in order to delve a bit deeper into the nature of the relationship that underlies both law and the curses which come at their end, I think we need to explore a critical term. And that term is brit, covenant. Because the pattern of a legal code, followed by blessings and curses, actually appears twice in the Torah, not surprisingly, once here, as you know, and once in the repetition of the Torah, in Mishneh Torah, in Devarim, the book of Deuteronomy, at the end of the parsha of Ki Tavo. And there, the Torah says explicitly, Ele divrei habrit, asher tiba Hashem et Moshe, lichot et b'nei Yisrael be'eretz Moav, milvad habrit, asher krati dam b'chorev. These are the words of the covenant, which God commanded Moshe to lichot, to cut, we're going to have to touch that word as well, to make with the children of Israel in the land of Moav, that's the end of the Devarim, aside from the covenant, which he made with them at Chorev. So we see that aside from content, what happened at Sinai was covenant. It was a brit. And indeed, our parsha actually makes that clear as well. Toward the end of the blessings, it says in the 26th chapter of Vayikra, in the 9th line, Ufaniti alechem vihivreti etchem, I'll turn toward you and I'll make you abundantly fruitful. Vihirbeti etchem vihakimoti et briti etchem, and I will establish my covenant with you. Now that's as a consequence. It's the long-term image, and the opposite is true as well when it says, and if you reject my commands, right? Not do all my commandments, et briti, to nullify or release yourselves from my covenant. And it seems to me that it's not the law, nor actually the reward and punishment that go with it, which are the brit itself. So what is a covenant? And I find that any time you want to explore a concept, it's always good to go to the home base, as Reb Shlomo calls it, to the first appearance in the Chumash, because even though it may not be definitive, since it is first, every usage afterwards is, to some degree, referential. And the first appearance of the word brit is in the story of Noah, of course. Right after the flood, and the animals have come out, and Noah is taking the ones who were so lucky to survive as to make it as sacrifices and burn them on the altar, God says, this is the sign that I set for the brit, the covenant between me and you, and every living creature with you for all ages to come. I've set my bow in the clouds, and it shall serve as a sign of the brit between me and the earth. So it's fascinating. First of all, who is this brit between? It says, between me and you, says God, but it's also between me and the earth. That's number one question. Number two, it doesn't seem in the way this is phrased, and if you want to look at the whole picture, open to the 9th chapter of Bereishit of Genesis, and look at lines 12 to 17, it's not a long parsha, it doesn't actually seem that Noach is required to do anything here. I mean, God's side is clear. The waters shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. What does Noach add to this covenant? And I think the essence of his contribution is actually also the answer to with whom this breach has been made. Is it between me and you, as God says, or is it between me and the earth, as God also says? Because it all comes out in the nature of the oath, or the sign which embodies this covenant. It's not just a secondary emblem, a quick reminder, oh yeah, I'm not going to destroy the earth again. It's expressive of the essence of what this covenant is, because the rainbow is, as far as I know, the only natural phenomenon of which one can truly say it doesn't exist without human experience. A rainbow is made up of rain, of course, the angle of the sun as it goes through, and, of course, the perspective of the viewer. This is why you can never get to the end of the rainbow. Sorry if you've been trying, right? Or why I might be at one end of my neighborhood and my wife on the cell phone at the other end of the neighborhood, and I can say to her, do you see that amazing rainbow? And she might say, no. Well, is it actually there? Because the essence of this covenant is the participation between God, who drives the process, the earth, which expresses the process, and humanity, which, of course, experiences the process. Right? And it connects very deeply to the element of memory, which is given such an emphasis in this covenant. Because memory, Zohar, and if you look back at the whole parsha, you'll see that the bow in the cloud is actually not a reminder to humanity. It says, when the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all living creatures, all flesh on earth. It's a very strange thing. Why does God need a reminder? And in fact, the word memory first appears in the Torah in the context of Noach. It says at the beginning of the 8th chapter, and God remembered Noach and all the beasts and the cattle that were there with him in the ark. Like he forgot? What on earth does memory have to do with God if it's the opposite of forgetting? Well, here you have to understand that the power of zechira, of memory in the Torah, and we'll be brief because it's a whole parsha unto itself, really is not about remembering lost information. It's about reconnecting to essentials which define identity, right? You literally remember. You reattach something to your present existence which once existed for you in the past. And so God says, I'm going to reattach to my commitment. And the rainbow is an expression of that. And in a sense, this is expressive of the aspect of Brit, which is covenantal relationship. Not a set of laws which you either know or don't know, and which therefore, in theory, you could be ignorant or forgetful of, and therefore you could be punished for not remembering. That's not what it is. It's the context for one's life. I'll give you an example. Being married to my wife is not a fact of my life. It's not a point of information or even something which I know. It's a key element of the context for how I walk in the world. And if, God forbid, I violated that relationship, you'd never say that I forgot I was married. You'd say I was unfaithful. And this is the deeper meaning of memory, particularly as the Torah applies it to God. It's the constant faithfulness and presence to a relationship. And of course, that's the expectation that Noach adds to this covenant. It's a constant faithfulness and present to the divine relationship which he experiences in the earth itself. So, after Noach, Abraham is, of course, probably the next most famous member of humanity who merits to a covenant with God. The truth is, he actually merits to a few of them, but let's start with the one which is most familiar. Right? V'hi Avram ben tishim shana v'teisha shanim. Avram, he's still Avram now, was 99 years old. Vayera Hashem el Avram, God appeared to him, vayomer elav, ani el Shaddai, right? I am the Almighty Lord. Hitalech lefanai v'hayet tamim. Go before me and be whole, perfect. Right? Ve'etna briti b'ini uve'encha, v'arbe otcha b'mod mod. I will place my covenant between you and your between me and you and your children, and I will increase you very much. And he goes on to describe, of course, the physical manifestation of this covenant, which is circumcision, the quintessential brit in Am Yisrael. And I just gave you the beginning. If you go back and you look at this, it's the 17th chapter of Genesis, and starting in the first line, you'll see if you look at the entire section, the word brit appears 13 times in the description of this covenant. Now, I was always taught that if a word repeats itself twice in close proximity, you should pay attention. If it repeats itself three times, you are required to explain why. 13? Now, there's a lot that this covenant adds. Because what exactly is the nature of circumcision? Why does it become the quintessential brit? Well, before we go into it head on, let's just look back a little bit at the first covenant which Abraham made with God. Back in the 15th chapter, it was called Brit Ben Habitarim. This very strange covenant which God made with Abraham that involved him cutting animals in half and passing between them, which apparently, if you look even in the book of Jeremiah, was the way in which covenants were made in the ancient world. The covenant between the pieces. And when explaining, or at least delving into its essence, the Midrash actually says, Rov kritot shebemikra shenamar behem krita, in el alide chalukat davar. Where most of the times it actually says krita, like a cutting, as in cutting of a breed, in the scriptures. It actually is speaking about a division of things. And it goes on, it starts with God cutting a brit with Abraham, and it goes on to many other descriptions, which it's beyond the scope of our discussion now, though worth it to look there in Midrash Sechel Tov and Lechcha Tetvav Yud Chen. But at the end, Yishma Chacham V'Yosef Lekach, and basically says, you know, the wise person is going to hear this list, and he's going to learn something fundamental out of it. Because what is this idea of the language of kritat brit, of a cutting of a brit, which means that you take something which was whole, and you split it in half? What does this add to our understanding of brit? Well, Abraham's life represents the nature of brit, which is partnership. God is inviting Abraham to take part in the active unfolding of creation. As it says at the beginning of the parsha that discusses circumcision, Hitalech lefanai, go before me. Right? As opposed to Noah, by the way, who walked with God, Abraham's out in front. He's not following God's lead. He's not even holding God's hand. He's pushing the lead edge of creation. And furthermore, everyone therefore has to do their part. Everyone has their portion. Otherwise, there is no whole. And that's the nature of a covenant. It's not simply a participation and an experience of the divine relationship to creation as it was with Noah. It's not even simply, well, if you do my laws, then you'll be rewarded, and if you don't do my laws, then you'll get punished. There are cause and effect, reward and punishment. No, no. It is the essence of a creation which cannot exist without our active participation. We each have our part, and without each part, there is no whole. That's the nature of covenantal relationship. So the next covenant we find that defines Am Yisrael's relationship with God is, of course, the Torah itself, which is referred to in the 24th chapter of Shemot, the 7th line, V'kach Sefer HaBrit V'yikra B'oznei HaAm, and Moshe took the Book of the Covenant and he read it in the ears of the people. V'yomru Kol Asher Diber Hashem Naaseh V'nishma. They, of course, said, anything which God says, we will do and hear. The famous commitment of action before understanding. And here it really seems clear. God gave the Torah. We committed to keeping it even before we knew really what it said. But apparently the sages weren't so sure exactly what we had committed to. You look in the Psik Zutra, a beautiful midrash, in Parshat Mishpatim, 24:7, if you want to look it up, it says, V'kach et Sefer HaBrit, he took the Book of the Covenant. Zehu shekatuv mitchilat breshit ad kan. Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda says, what's Sefer HaBrit? It's what was actually written from the beginning of Genesis until this point. Meaning it wasn't actually the content of the revelation at Sinai that we've had for the last, you know, book and a half of the Torah. It was everything which came before. Rabbi Shmuel says, it's the brachot and the klalot. It's the blessings and the curses. Shenemar ela divrei habrit. Like these are the words of the covenant as we saw from the book of Deuteronomy. Now, this looks like an argument. But in truth, I think that both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shmuel are actually saying the same thing. Because beyond the technics of a contract, beyond even the partnership in unfolding of creation, what really makes a brit is the story. Whether that story is the backstory, who are we and how did we get here? When Rabbi Yossi says that Moshe read them the Sefer HaBrit, the Book of the Covenant, and that was from the story of Bereishit until now. Remember, that includes their own experiences in coming out of Egypt. Can you imagine the astounded looks on the people's faces when Moshe came to them in the lead up to the full-on revelation? They said, okay, Moshe, what does God have to say? And he tells them what they did yesterday. He actually unfolds their own lives for them in a way in which they realize they're participant in a divine story. So that's Rabbi Yossi's answer. And of course, Rabbi Yishmael is simply focused on the story from here forward. Because what's going to happen and how will I know if we're headed where this story actually is meant to go is one of the ways in which we can understand the blessings and the curse. Right? It's another expression of the intimacy of relationship and partnership. And in this time, in partnership in the joint project of how the Torah itself will play out in creation. It's not just Noach's experience of God's commitment to life. It's not just Abraham's appointing to a role of a partnership in unfolding creation. Now it's Am Yisrael's active participation in the narration of the grand story of the Torah. Now, the Midrash gives a powerful visual to this aspect of the Brit, which I want to give you. Right? They say that when Moshe went up on the mountain to receive the two tablets, which of course are also referred to as Luchot HaBrit, the tablets of the covenant, that when God handed them to him, Midrash says that the tablets were six tefachim long, they were 6 cubits long, and that God held two, and that Moshe held two, and that there were two in between. It's a different version of Michelangelo's image of God and man touching it. Here, what bridges God and man is the story. And the covenantal relationship, the Brit, is the commitment to telling that story through the way we live our lives. And so finally, we come to our Parsha. And it may seem clear why the Brit is the context for our relationship with God, and really, for our lives as a whole. And furthermore, it might seem clear at this point how Brit expresses a partnership with God specifically in unfolding creation, as Abraham went before God, and in articulating the Torah, as we as a people committed to move forward with the story. But at the very end of the blessings and curses in Parshat Bechukotai, which is really the end of this part of the Torah, a final element of covenant is added. And it's a line which appears every once in a while in our liturgy. V'zechardi et briti Yaakov, v'af et briti Yitzchak, v'et briti Avraham ezkor, v'aret ezkor. Right? And I will recall, here's that element of memory once again, my covenant with Yaakov, and even my covenant with Yitzchak, and even my covenant with Abraham, I will remember, and I will remember the land. Now, one element of this is the individuality. One might think that a Brit is an archetype. The rainbow represents God's covenant with creation. Well, I certainly am a subset of that. I don't have to worry about it. See the rainbow. I'll make a blessing if I remember. Shalom Yisrael, right? Abraham is also an archetype. Okay, humanity is participating in the unfolding of creation. We are the creature which has will, and therefore we have to do our part to make it happen. Fine. Am Yisrael got the Torah, and we are speaking out the story that the author of creation would like to see happen. Okay, that's a big picture piece as well. But here, the question is, Yaakov, Yitzchak, Abraham, the land, each one has its portion. What's your divine covenant? And even beyond that, beyond context, beyond partnership and creation, beyond even reward and punishment, there's a divine commitment to remember the specific. And by the way, not just a divine commitment. You may notice that there's a word missing in this verse. It should have said, and I will remember my covenant with Yaakov, and I will remember my covenant with Yitzchak, and even my covenant with Abraham, I will remember land, except it doesn't remember. It just says, Af Briti Yitzchak, and also my covenant with Yitzchak. Now Rashi brings a midrash which explains that the reason that it says this is because memory in regard to Yitzchak is superfluous. Because even though the narrative of the Torah says that when Abraham bound Yitzchak on the altar, that God intervened and he came down and a ram was offered in his place, the reality is, says the midrash, Alav Ashachah, that Abram actually went up and he sacrificed Yitzchak and he burned his body, and the ashes of Yitzchak are munach lifnei Hashem l'olam. The ashes of Yitzchak rest before God forever. Because the personal expression of all of these general embracing covenants that the Torah articulates, our personal expression is commitment. And I think it's worth it in these weeks of historic significance for the modern phase of the Jewish people, Holocaust Day, Memorial Day for the fallen of Israel, right? Yom HaAtzmaut, the Independence Day, and in just a few days, Yom Yerushalayim, the complex celebration of a return to a city which lies at the heart of our stories. It's worth it to remember that the commitment within a covenant is all-consuming. And if we are so consumed by our commitment that we can honestly say that our ashes lay before God forever, well then, that's a covenant which can never be forgotten by God. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Sher. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.